I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity, so we saved you some time to get right to the good stuff. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Last week, Sugarbush Resort in Warren announced that it is being acquired by Alterra Mountain Company. Alterra is based in Colorado and already owns 14 ski areas, mostly out west, but also one in Quebec and Stratton Mountain in Vermont. Speaking to VPR's Henry Epp, Sugarbush CEO Wynn Smith laid out a few of the reasons why selling makes sense now.
We're going to have to continue to make investments, especially in upgrading our snowmaking and other elements to remain, you know, competitive and sustainable. And while, you know, we could clearly do that on our own, you know, some of the bills would be big, and I think we could do it faster and better with a, you know, a better capitalized parent.
Smith also referenced having to compete with other local resorts that are now part of large resort conglomerates. Earlier this year, Vail Resorts entered into a merger agreement with the company that owns Mount Snow and other Northeast resorts, and Vail already owns Okemo Mountain and Snow Mountain Resort. So consolidation is certainly a continuing trend. But there are other things Vermont's ski industry is contending with as well, from changes in the labor market and labor law, the challenges of climate change, and how to attract and retain customers. So today we're going to talk about Vermont's ski industry with three reporters who cover the topic. Henry Epp is a reporter and All Things Considered host for VPR. Adam Howard is president and CEO of Height of Land Publications, publishers of the magazines Alpinist, Backcountry, Cross Country Skier, and Mountain Flyer. They're both in the studio here with me in Colchester. Henry and Adam, nice to talk with you.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
And Abigail Giles is assistant editor at Vermont Sports and Vermont Ski and Ride magazines and a reporter for the Addison County Independent. And she's at the studios in Middlebury College. Abigail, thanks for being with us, too.
Thanks very much for having me.
Henry, can you start a little bit and catch us up to speed on what the deal is with Sugarbush and Alterra, why it happened and why right now?
Yeah, so as you played that clip from Wynn Smith, he cited several reasons, which was basically that it's difficult for him as an independent operator to compete with these conglomerates that have started buying up a lot of the ski mountains around the Northeast, especially Vail, which, as you mentioned, owns Stowe and Mount Snow and Okemo. And I mean, his basic argument was that, you know, it kind of, if you can't beat them, join them, right? If you need to make these upgrades to have snow on the mountain every winter, especially, he also cited climate change as a factor, that you need to make more snow more quickly at certain times when the conditions are right. And he essentially said, you know, you can do that better with a partner, an owner that has a lot more money.
Right. And especially if you're buying, like, you know, five different machines, you can maybe get a better deal than if you're buying just one for your one Vermont resort.
Exactly. In terms of the timing, I'm not sure exactly what all went into his decision, but I did talk to him for a different story, you know, just about a month ago. And I listened back to that tape and he was clearly mulling it over, did not give an answer at that time whether he was going to buy. But, you know, I put the question to him and he was sort of laying out all those factors. The sale is not official yet. It will go through in January in the first quarter, assuming all goes to plan. It's also not clear how much it's for. It's Alterra is a private company, so we're not sure how much they bought Sugarbush for, but all coming up soon.
Abigail, this is just one data point in what looks like increased consolidation, or is increased consolidation, certainly in the Northeast ski resort market. Can you sort of give us the lay of the land? I mean, this seems to be happening all over the place.
Yeah, certainly. I think, you know, in the last several years, we've seen this trend kind of take off across the country. In Vermont, we saw on a local scale, Vail Resorts purchased Stowe Mountain Resort in February 2017, and then we saw Stratton down south go to Alterra the same year. And Okemo went to Vail in June 2018, Mount Snow earlier this year. So it's certainly, I think, what we're seeing in Vermont echoes a national trend. Vail Resorts currently owns and operates 37 resorts across the world, and that's quite a lot. Alterra Mountain Company now owns 14. So they definitely offer quite a compelling portfolio that they can draw from. They have some really interesting multi-resort pass options, which really kind of let skiers hedge the bet against climate change and some of the other pressures that Henry spoke to in terms of being able to sort of pick and choose where you want to ski within that portfolio.
Adam, do you see skiers actually doing that? I mean, are these epic ski passes and others valuable to local skiers to think, oh, and I can ski out in Colorado and I can ski in British Columbia? I mean, is that what skiers want, to have all of these options? Or are most people hitting their one or two local mountains and really would rather maybe have all of the ones, you know, around Sugar Bush available to them? But that's the competition.
Well, I think those who have the means to travel want it, unless they're standing in line at their own resort, which also offers it. It's a mixed bag. And we've seen it play out in different ways throughout the country. If you go to Little Cottonwood Canyon, for instance, outside of Salt Lake City, where Alta and Snowbird are both part of the Icon Pass, you can't even get up that canyon anymore. It's become so busy. So it's really a mixed bag. I mean, as far as a product goes, it's hugely popular. It makes a lot of sense. But it comes with some consequences with regard to culture, for sure.
So maybe it looks great, a little bit less of a good thing in practice, or a little bit less easy to actually make it work for skiers in practice.
I really think it's a personal thing. It's really hard to say.
Abigail, how else do you see consolidation playing out for skiers? I mean, is this good for Vermont skiers?
Yeah, you know, that's a really interesting question. I think from the get-go, one thing we've seen across the board, but certainly in Vermont, is a rapid decline in, or rather price drop in, a season pass at many resorts. So when Stowe went to Vail, it actually cut the cost of a season season pass to Stowe in half, which is sort of contrary, I think, to the narrative that most people associate with consolidation in a big industry. At the same time, we saw season pass prices jump, or rather day lift ticket prices jump up. So I think in this multi-resort pass landscape, you see a really affordable multi-resort early season buy in terms of the season pass. And oftentimes you see more expensive day lift tickets. And so for skiers who can ski around or who are really committed to the sport already, that's a great deal. But if you're someone who maybe wants to learn or wants to sort of check out one ski area and get to know it really well, I think sometimes there are fewer offerings from those bigger conglomerates for that demographic. That said, I do think that Vermont's independent resorts, of which there are now 10, if you exclude Sugarbush now, they've done a really good job of kind of stepping in to fill that space and try to create some diverse offerings there.
Kenny wrote in to say, as with many other industries, the cost of doing business in this state continues to have adverse impacts to local ownership. And Hillary in Essex Junction says, as many of our ski areas are being bought by larger Western resorts and being managed by people who live out of state, we have seen management jobs disappear along with the availability of lower priced packages and discounts for seniors. Hillary says, my question is this: do we know if any of the smaller ski areas that have closed in recent years are considering reopening? Do we have any information about that possibility? Is anyone already investigating this? It would be great for people who live here to be able to continue skiing here. And Abigail, it sounds like that's what you're seeing, is that this may be where the independent resorts can play a greater role with, you know, some changes with how season tickets and passes work in these consolidated resorts.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, right after Peak Resorts sold, which was Mount Snow's parent company this July, we caught up with the chief revenue officer for the Fairbanks Group, which owns Bromley, and he said this just means more skiers coming to Vermont and more of a reason for resorts like ours to differentiate ourselves. And in fact, we actually caught up with Rusty Gregory, who's the CEO of Alterra Mountain Company, right after this news broke. And he said, you know, I think the bigger that Vail Resorts and Alterra get, the more gaps there are in demand and in the market for those independent resorts, especially in a place like Vermont, that have really creative, innovative, committed branding and kind of a unique thing that they offer and are really close to their clientele to kind of fill that gap.
You know, we've reported over the years on like the lost resorts and some people who have done a lot of research in some of these ghost mountains that used to be ski resorts. Adam, are you seeing any possibility of some of these other places sort of finding a niche that may be different as some of these bigger resorts look more like big resorts out west?
I certainly think that it's what they're going to have to do. The one thing that the Vails and the Alteras of the world cannot do is be agile necessarily with their product offerings and their pricing. You know, I live in Jeffersonville, and that's, of course, home to Smuggler's Notch. And so, you know, the management up there, they're tremendously agile, and I think and they have to be. And I believe the other nine independents in the state will continue to make offerings that are not only good for their local community but also visitors. It is tough when if you have an Icon Pass, which is the Alterra offering, or an Epic Pass, which is the Vail offering, if you come to Vermont, you know, are you going to want to shell out more for a one-day ticket at Jay or Smuggs or, you know, Burke? That's a harder sell for sure, and I think that they're grappling with that day to day. I don't know how they're going to solve that.
You don't see any new resorts coming in, though, tiny ones that might be able to be like, you know, we can do this for our local community, similar to, you know, Hardack or something like that.
Well, gosh, that's tough. You know, I mean, Hardack and Cochran's are awesome. And we taught, you know, Abigail mentioned, you know, the learn to ski type offerings that I think, you know, these really high priced tickets at Vail and Alterra struggle to bring in the new skiers to the market. I think those little places are more important than ever at creating new skiers.
We got a note from Mike who says, I'm concerned for second home properties. There is a ski tradition of home mountain and a feel of community, but the multi-mountain passes seem to discourage local loyalty. Our property tax base is reliant on our weekend warriors, as do our local businesses. Industry consolidation will have deep effects beyond the resorts proper. Now, Henry Epp, you've been reporting as well on jobs and how resorts are trying to attract seasonal workers. We got a note from Jennifer who says, the prestige is completely gone from being a ski instructor. Why do ski areas struggle to find enough ski and snowboard staff? Because they pay so little. Are Vermonters aware that most instructors earn just a little more than minimum wage? And thanks to Vermont labor laws, it's possible for a full-time instructor to go to work, sign in by 8:30, not receive any lessons, and then be sent home at 1:30 and earn $13 for the day. Yes, that would be show-up pay for two group lesson time slots on a slow day, $6.50 per show-up pay. Instructors are only paid when they work, and that is when there are lessons. How is this possible? How on earth is this legal? So, Henry, talk to us a little bit about the job market here.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a complicated picture. I did a story on this a few weeks ago, and, you know, sort of the bottom line in that I was hearing was a little bit contrary to that comment, which was basically that the unemployment rate is so low here in Vermont. The workforce is aging, which means that resorts really need to compete for seasonal workers, especially. And a lot of these bigger companies like Vail, owning Stowe, and places like Sugarbush were offering pretty generous benefits. Now, whether that translates to pay, like our commenter mentioned, is another question. But they are, you know, throwing out a lot of perks, obviously season passes, but also, you know, child care options and 401ks and various other benefits to, you know, try to get the necessary workers that they have to hire every year around this time. But, you know, doing that story, it was interesting. I went to a job fair at Sugarbush where I talked to someone who had worked at Stowe last season and was looking into jobs at Sugarbush. Then I went up to Stowe, and in the parking lot, I met a guy who worked at Sugarbush and was looking at jobs at Stowe. So, you know, for those employees at least, and these are, you know, isolated cases, of course, but they clearly feel like they have options and they are looking for those options. I did hear from those people also, though, that the pay is low. One guy told me, you know, I stay in the, you know, sort of hotel side of things where you can get tips, because tips are so important because the pay just is not high enough.
Yeah, like to Jennifer's point, I mean, it may be one thing if you're saying, I'm going to come for the season, I basically want to get the free housing and I want to be able to ski for free. Yeah. But if you're, you know, a 35-year-old person with a family and a mortgage, then maybe those perks aren't as attractive as being paid more.
Exactly. Yeah, at a certain point, you probably want those bottom line, you know, a higher paycheck than sort of the, you know, quote unquote ski bum sort of lifestyle of having a ski pass and a place to crash for a few months.
Yeah, I mean, Abigail, is it a, I know we have a lot of international workers who come in and do seasonal work here in Vermont on resorts, and certainly a lot of seasonal workers, and that's always going to be the case if the busy season is only for part of the year. But what do you see as you look ahead to how to make this work for Vermonters who want to work in the ski resorts and for the industry as a whole, especially as things change, like perhaps the minimum wage?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, Jane. I think, looking forward, on the one hand, as it's been spoken to, some of these bigger companies do have greater resources. I think, whether that translates to employee pay is always an interesting question. But definitely, I think across the board for small businesses, the minimum wage question is a challenging one for sure for many communities.
Mike wrote in to say, Philip says, Sugarbush is the reason I'm a Vermonter. My parents moved here in the 70s to ski and work there and never left. My parents are now at the end of 40-year careers, and we are raising our family in Vermont, three generations now spending quality time together in the Green Mountains. Let's go to Tom, who's calling in from Londonderry. Hey, Tom, go right ahead.
Hey, the state of Vermont leases land to seven resorts and collects lease payments based to a large part on ticket revenue. As those resorts consolidate and issue more blended pass products, especially seasonal pass products, how does the state figure out and assure that it's getting full and fair lease payments for all of the in-state use? It's an interesting way to think about lease payments and what Vermont's Forest Parks and Recreations Department is getting in terms of revenue.
Tom, thanks for the question. Adam, do you know the answer to that?
I do not. I might have in a previous life, but not any longer.
Abigail, what about you? What about the lease payments?
I have to say the same as Adam there. I'm not sure. I might have to pass on that one.
Tom, it's a good question, and it sounds like nobody here today knows the answer to it, which probably means that one of us will be reporting on it fairly soon, because it's a good question, and thank you for raising it. Listeners, if you have other unanswerable questions, we'll give it our best shot. 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your comments on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.org. Chris wrote in to say, Whaleback in Enfield, New Hampshire turned into a nonprofit. Is that an option for the Vermont 9 independent resorts still remaining? Adam, how about that one? What do you think?
I suppose it's always an option. I think the thing we have to remember about these independently held resorts is they are owned by, an organization, a business, an individual. And those folks are going to be looking for an exit strategy. So if a nonprofit or another business comes to them with some sort of solution, I think it would absolutely be on the table.
Something like Whaleback, I mean, that's an interesting one in New Hampshire. You pass it right on 89, and half the time you look and you think, I mean, for a while it looked like maybe they didn't even have snowmaking, and now I think they do. But it's such a low mountain. It's so dependent on weather. It's such a small mountain. How does a resort, well, not even a resort, but a ski mountain like that survive?
Like any other mountain survives, as a nonprofit, they can do fundraising, but ticket sales and hot dog sales and Coke sales, it's pretty simple. It's like a baseball game.
Well, baseball maybe not the best today as we look at potential non-future for the Vermont Lake Monsters as well. Henry, you want to weigh in?
I think that's certainly an interesting question in terms of going toward a nonprofit model. It makes me think of the industry that we're in news, where you see corporations that are struggling, like newspapers turning to a nonprofit model where people can give donations. That might make sense for some smaller ski resorts, especially, further in the southern part of the state, which may be receiving less snow in the years to come and maybe, having a trickier financial situation.
We got a note from Dennis who says, what effect will consolidation have on property values in the towns around the local ski areas? Abigail, what do you think? I mean, we heard that note from Mike who said, I'm concerned for these second home property owners and the tax base for towns, because there was this sort of loyalty and this feel of, it's our local mountain. And so Dennis is wondering, what actually is this likely to do in terms of property values? Do you have a sense?
I don't know for certain about property values specifically, but I will say I think the general consensus is that as these giants move in and kind of move into resort communities, they bring more resources, but they also bring the potential for a lot more skier visits, which is a good thing, I think, across the state and industry-wide. So I think as you do get sort of more visitation and traffic to communities, certainly there are big changes at play that affect things like real estate and, affordability of homes and the landscape of the local community. But you also see the potential for some economic vitalization that can go, I think, beyond the sort of conventional walls of just the resort itself.
Adam?
I think to bolt onto that, I'm not worried about property values, but I am we are seeing a demographic shift, right? Take Stowe, for instance. Take the labor market. Take Airbnb, right? So it's really enticing for a homeowner, a second homeowner, to Airbnb their home out or their apartment over their garage versus renting it to a Lyftie or a ski patroller. So when those people making minimum wage plus have to move further and further and further out of a resort town, it gets that much tighter. So I think it's going to be healthy, but it's going to be a shift that's going to take some adjustment.
Or, Henry, what you've been finding is resorts increasingly offering more sort of on-campus housing to try to deal with that particular issue.
Yeah, and that was something that Sugarbush mentioned when I did that story, that they are looking to build more employee housing. They already offer some. They want to build more. They also do things where they sort of partner and try to incentivize local landlords to rent out to seasonal workers, which may have something to do with the fact that those landlords could also, you know, offer their properties on Airbnb.
We're talking about Vermont's ski industry today and how it's managing a changing landscape for resorts, skiers, and the labor force they rely on. And let's go to Seth, who's calling in from Stowe. Hi, Seth. Thanks for calling.
Hi. One observation I have, and I'm fairly new to Vermont. I moved here last winter, and I work near the resort, was sort of the growth in this business and how much outside, out-of-state revenue, I guess, it brings in, and all of those extra people brings a lot of extra traffic and wear and tear on the towns and stuff like that. I'm just wondering if these resort companies are working with the community in any way to try to curb that or help solve that problem of the influx of people coming in and out.
Seth, thanks for your call. Abigail, what do you see?
You know, I think certainly in terms of kind of broader goals for communities, I know Vail Resorts has had a legacy of investing more broadly in kind of community growth, and they've certainly already done that here in Vermont. They have a kind of a charitable community trust that Rob Katz, the CEO, and his wife manage personally. In terms of, infrastructure management in town, I have to confess I'm not sure on that front what they've done so far.
Either of the two of you hear anything, Henry?
I'm not sure on that front. I mean, obviously, or presumably they pay their property taxes, which will go towards some of those resources. I was looking back at some of our reporting, as Abigail mentioned. When Vail bought Stowe a couple of years ago, the owners gave $100,000, I think, to the Stowe Land Trust. So not physical infrastructure in that way, but, making an effort to invest in the community.
And let's go to Connie, who's with us from Waterbury. Hi, Connie.
Hi.
What are you thinking about? Go right ahead.
So I just wanted to comment that I'm a pass holder, an Epic pass holder at Stowe. And my husband and I were planning a trip to Japan, and I'm looking through the guidebook, and it was like, oh, I forgot about skiing in Japan. And our passes, our Epic passes, were good in Japan. And another time we went to visit, we were out west visiting friends, and it's like, oh, we can ski at Salt Lake at Park City. And this year we're thinking of skiing at Vancouver. So when people are worried about their property values, I think that the opposite may be true, that it will draw people to the town to visit. Oh, I want to go to a New England town and ski Stowe. So just my comment.
Well, Connie, thanks for sharing your experience, and interesting to see how you're thinking about where you can ski around the world. Speaking of property, let's go to Todd in Burlington. Hi, Todd. Oh, we're working on it. Todd, hi. I think
hey,
we have you now. Hi, go right ahead.
So I work in the real estate industry and as an appraiser, and there is no doubt a direct correlation between consolidation and an increase in activity. I mean, the Vail factor, you can ask any realtor in Stowe or Tim Morrissey at the assessor's office. As soon as the article went out that Vail was buying Stowe, people were jumping all over it. And I've talked to countless homeowners who said, we were kind of waiting to see about buying a second home. And then as soon as they found out Stowe was being bought by Vail, I mean, they jumped on these second homes. Values have shot up. Activity has shot up. You know, there's definitely nothing but good news for property values in these towns where consolidation is happening.
So, Todd, nothing but good news for property values, but what about for middle-class people who either want to work in that area or live there? I mean, how does that play out then for the rest of the community beyond the people who can afford second homes?
You know, there's kind of that theory that a rising tide raises all ships. So people that maybe already own a home that might not be a high value home, you know, their values are going up as well. Let's say it's a local contractor, whoever might own a smaller home. They're seeing values go up for their home as well. I do agree that the Airbnb movement has certainly limited rental capacity for locals looking for rental, because I've also heard from a lot of homeowners who have recently purchased and said, yeah, it's great, we can Airbnb the apartment over our garage and pay for our taxes because, you know, Stowe is so popular now. So, you know, there's a little of that going on as well. The Airbnb has certainly had an impact on, you know, the local rental supply for sure.
Yeah, Todd, thanks for sharing your expertise with us. Appreciate that. Ralph Delorier is the owner of Bolton Valley Resort, and he's calling in. Hi, Ralph.
Hi.
So what do you see?
Day.
How do you
There's
see
snow
this?
All over the place.
There is snow all over the place. How do you see this as somebody who owns one of those now 9 remaining independent resorts?
Well, I've got partners. I don't own it 100%. You know, I got some of my kids and friends in here now. But we think it's creating a lot of excitement in the ski industry. People are talking about it. I mean, we do have to think more about product differentiation. But you look at the Magic's putting in a new lift this year. We're doing all of our night skiing. We're making lots of improvements. I think it's creating excitement in the ski area. But we also think that maybe some people like to ski and they see the owners walking around. 3 of my kids live up here and work here. 3 of my grandchildren are on the mountain. So it's a whole different feeling, I think, than the new kind of corporate resort look.
Well, Ralph, I appreciate that and hearing from, you know, how you see it, how you see these buyouts increasing excitement and certainly talk about skiing. And certainly can see that today, you know, having this conversation and thinking about skiing in Vermont. So, Ralph Delorier, thank you very much for calling in. We got a note from Michael in Thetford who says, results from the Hubbard Brook ecosystem study in the White Mountains show that in the last 50 years, the number of weather days suitable for making snow has been reduced by about 8 per ski season. But the changes are not distributed equally throughout the season. 7 of the 8 days are in December, the prime time for snowmaking before the holiday rush that is so essential for economic viability for the ski industry. Adam Howard, can you talk a little bit about how you see the change in climate likely impacting ski resorts and skiing in general in Vermont? And it certainly doesn't impact, you know, equally every resort.
I think it starts far away from the resorts in Vermont for me. I mean, if you look at the baby boomers who the ski industry is really struggling to replace, they all grew up skiing on mom-and-pop hills like Cochran's, Lake Hardack, in Ohio or Pennsylvania, you name it. Most of those areas are gone now because of any number of reasons, but I think climate change is really hitting those areas harder than any. And certainly here, yeah, our window for making snow has diminished. Our window for natural snow has diminished. There's just no... You can't argue that. Thankfully, this year, last year, we've had an excellent early season, and it's, you know, it's fueling a lot of stoke for sure.
Henry, what do you see moving forward? I mean, certainly we know that a change in climate is going to have effects on everything, but yeah, certainly for skiing, it's a seasonal activity. We've seen a lot more diversification, summer activities, but there's more to that. I mean, snowmaking is just one of them that our listener mentions.
Well, go back to the interviews I've done with Wynn Smith at Sugarbush, and he basically said, you know, there are about 40 days when resorts really make their money over the season, which is much longer. And so he was really emphasizing that his resort, at least, will be looking to put more snow on the mountain in fewer days throughout the season to really capitalize on the moments when they can make as much snow as possible, which I thought was interesting. And he also, you know, said basically he doesn't think skiing in Vermont is going to go away in his lifetime, at least. But, you know, thought really the way that we go about making snow and go about skiing really in Vermont is going to change. It's going to be more volatile. It's going to be more unpredictable. And his emphasis was really on, we got to get out and make as much snow as we can whenever we can. And that, I think, is going to change the business model, and it's going to change how the ski conditions are too.
Abigail, what do you think?
Yeah, I think we're going to see an increasing, focus on snowmaking and infrastructure and technology that lets resorts be really nimble during the season when we have things like big thaws or rain on snow events. That certainly has happened so far. We've seen, even before the Ville Resorts purchase, massive snowmaking infrastructure improvements at Mount Snow down south. They've invested actually $32 million in snowmaking upgrades in the last 3 years, which is pretty wild, and they're working towards 100% coverage of their terrain, which is a big shift, I think, in the landscape from what people were looking at even, 15, 20 years ago in the ski industry.
You know, it's interesting because when we look at the projections for the next couple of decades, it certainly doesn't look like skiing is going to go away in Vermont or snow is going to go away. But to Michael in Thetford's point, if when the snow is coming and when the cold is coming are at different times than when resorts and ski areas traditionally can either entice most of their business for the season or get most of their business for the season. I mean, Abigail, that might mean a different business model in some sense if it's not just like no snow, but if it's snow at different times and cold at different times, I mean, that could certainly change things too, though, couldn't it?
Yeah, it definitely could. One thing I think that's kind of interesting around snowmaking is we do have a reputation in Vermont, especially at some of our southern Vermont resorts, for being, a great destination, especially in the east, but I think now nationally, for park skiing. And I think that's a great example of something that, is a little bit less weather dependent. You can use man-made snow and resorts like, you've got Mount Snow with Carinthia Parks, which celebrated its 10th anniversary last year. They just opened a massive new $22 million base lodge there. I think you're seeing a kind of more creative look at what growth can mean and how to diversify with changing climate as well as a changing landscape in the industry.
Adam, I want to save a minute or two to talk about the World Cup, but I also want to ask you a little bit about changing consumer behavior. And certainly over the last 5 or 10 years, we hear a lot of reports of missing skiers who have gone off piste and they're out in the backcountry and they don't know where they are, and emergency personnel doesn't always know where they are, and certainly people have different desires now and maybe increasingly have different desires, and not always people who know where they're going in the backcountry. But how do you see this changing idea of where skiers want to go, and they want these adventures that don't necessarily include riding up in the lift and then skiing down on the groomed trail?
Well, I was a ski patroller at Smuggs for 5 years, so I've been on my share of backcountry rescues, and I know that those numbers are increasing everywhere as the sport has grown. But to me, that's really not backcountry skiing. Backcountry skiing is to me when you go to a trailhead and you go up from the bottom and you ski back down to where you start, or you do a multi-day traverse, or you use one of these great new huts that we have in our backcountry. I could talk a long time about backcountry skiing, but the equipment has become incredibly good in the last 20 years. A lot of the true backcountry equipment you can ski on full time at the resort now, which is a huge change. I was just at Sunday River this weekend, and they allow skinning up during all resort hours on any trail. Something I'd like to see more resorts, including my own, get on the bandwagon for. But then we're able to ski on relatively hard snow on some of this backcountry gear. So it's unlimited.
Yeah, it sounds great. But that also means a lower barrier to entry for people who may not have the same ethic or the same ability to know how to do it right.
That is true. And that's, frankly, one of the kind of tenets of our business is to educate people on that sort of risk and risk management. It's like any sport. There's so much we can learn, and it's on the individual to actually be responsible and learn and share what they know.
All right, we got like 1 minute, but you have said, in fact, you said to one of our producers that you think the World Cup at Killington is probably the single biggest event in Vermont of any kind. Back that up. That's a bold statement.
Well, 30,000 people in a weekend. You got Grand Point North. What do they do for people? Maybe that much.
But you mean the concert series in the summertime?
What else? It's huge. It's incredible. It's like it's a huge ski party. It's insane, and we're super excited for it. I've covered it for the Stowe Reporter for the last 4 years just because they have a great buffet for journalists there, primarily.
Oh, well, I see the reasoning.
But it's super fun. It's so fun.
And this is over Thanksgiving weekend this year. I think this is the fourth year. We know it's set for another year in 2020. Abigail, will you be covering it as well?
Yeah, certainly. We'll definitely be there. It's a great event every year. And I know Michaela Schifrin has said it's her favorite stop on the circuit. And I think the fans and the crowds and the support for women's ski racing in Vermont are really pretty outstanding.
Well, Henry and I will miss out on the shrimp cocktail, but I hope you two enjoy it for us. Abigail Giles is assistant editor at Vermont Sports and Vermont Ski and Ride magazines and a reporter for the Addison County Independent. Adam Howard is president and CEO of Height of Land Publications, the publishers of the magazines Alpinist, Backcountry, Cross Country Skier, and Mountain Flyer. And Henry Epp is a reporter and All Things Considered host for VPR. Thanks very much to all three of you.
Thanks, Jane.
Thank you.